The Senate Rules Committee will come to order, and we will, you know, we'll move slowly here because we want to recognize that Senator Senjum is en route. He's en route, yeah. Yeah, no, yes. But there's nothing too exciting here. We have Senator Clark moves. Do we take a report from the subcommittee or not?
Do we have to? Good.
We take a motion on that. Senator Clark moves the report of the subcommittee on permanent rules to put it before us. All in favor, say aye.
He's all ears.
All opposed, motion adopted. Okay, then just kind of for, I think we'll just take up the permanent rules today. I have talked with the speaker, and I think they're not quite ready on the joint rules yet. So there may be additional work being done on that, and we'll take that up when that happens. So on the permanent rules, first change there corrects on rules 4.5 to 4.7, corrects the proper references for the Senate committees to those with, that are to agree with the titles that we've given these committees. Rule 4.8 requires memorials and resolutions to come directly to the Rules Committee. 7.5 corrects the listing of budget bills to agree with the current names of the budget divisions. 8.2 reduces from 1 year to 60 legislative days the deadline for a committee to complete action on an appointment. 10.2 increases from 10 to 14 days the time for the minority to make its committee assignments. And we're just trying to be more realistic there about what it takes to get that job done. And frankly, no one's probably going to hold the minority to 14 days either, unless there's problems. Because you do have to get the committees set before the session starts. 10.6 clarifies that the chair of the rules can add or delete members of a division. We have a current rule that says at some point the chair of the rules committee, after consultation with the minority leader, can make changes on committees. This also clarifies that includes divisions. 11.1 permits the subcommittee on committees to exceed 5 members and requires that majority-minority membership be substantially in proportion. Creates a conference committee, subcommittee, basically, of 3 members, one from the minority. And the combination of those two rules basically gets us into a situation that I think is more realistic on what is actually being done around here. Conference committees generally are appointed based on a recommendation by the author of the bill, with some minor changes every so often. And the fiction of having 4 or 5 people go to the front of the chamber to think about it, I think it's just more direct to say, look, the majority leader is going to talk with the minority leader, and they're going to kind of make sure this fits. But by the same token, limiting the subcommittee on committees, the one that appoints all these pension commission and everything else, limiting that to 5 members puts us in a tricky situation right now that you'd either have to be 4-1, 4 majority, 1 minority, which is not balanced, or 3-2, which is not balanced. And so my intent would be to go to 6 members right now, 6 or 7. I'm going to talk with Senator Senjum, and have at least 4-2. And I had mentioned that I was thinking that those members should be, I forget what that list is, but Senator Olson, we were going to draft you to be on that committee.
Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about 11.1 now.
Okay.
Subcommittee on committees. We're bifurcating. Under current rule, the subcommittee on committees, the one that appoints all the commissions and stuff, is the same as the subcommittee that appoints the conference committees. You know, the little group that trots to the front of the chamber and does this. We're separating those two, and we're saying the subcommittee on committee should be a little bigger because it's all these appointments. There's, I don't know if it's hundreds, but there's a lot of appointments. And that should be a broader group that can make sure we have a nice balance and get the right members on. The subcommittee on rule on conference committees, through practice, has really been a discussion between the majority leader and the minority leader after dealing with the author about who should be on these things. And in most circumstances, I was on the thing for a while. Senator Berglund's been on it over the years.
It's not always the author that decides.
Not always, but in
fact, many times it's you.
But what we're going to do is have the author understand that we're going to do something that's balanced and it works out. I think it's going to work nicely. If it becomes a problem, we'll rediscuss it here. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think Senator Sinema's going to be thrilled with the way it's going to function. And we're just going to try to make sure we have an orderly process without acting like there's this big deliberation going on. I think people will be pleased. If not, we'll revisit it. And then Rule 47 adds bills to the table. Oh, this is the bed-sold thing. Adds the bills on the table to those that must be returned to committee after adjournment in odd number of years, except that bills vetoed by the governor or the conference committee will remain on the floor. Apparently, what, Mr. Watson, what are the group of bills that were sitting there that didn't need to be sitting there? I forget Senator Bedsold's discussion of this.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, that at the end of the first year, bills that were sitting on the calendar or all those bills on general orders, they get referred back to the last committee that they came from. But members have been alert to that and have made a practice of taking bills and knocking them off general orders and just laying them on the table at the end of the session so that they won't go back to committee. And Senator Bedsold is trying to get at those bills and send them back to committee as well.
Just so we don't have stuff sitting there that everybody's forgotten about.
Mr. Chairman, you're just talking about paper or strategy?
Paper. If somebody thinks, Senator Bedsold and Neville discussed this quite at length, and there's nothing going on here other than let's just kind of clean the desk off.
So, Mr. Chair, that it doesn't mean that pull them back so we can change our mind kind of thing. It's a matter that just keep them in the jurisdiction of the committee and send them on their way once you get started again? Or
this is when the session's over. The current rule is to send most stuff back to committees, except for veto messages and conference committee reports, which don't, I mean, there's no reason to send them back to committee. The floor should decide what it's going to do ultimately. Whereas bills that have never passed the full Senate, why would you have them stuck on the floor after the session completes the first year? Get them back to committees. Apparently, we weren't ready for prime time yet. That's the thought. I don't know if that's the way Bedsold would say it, but he's a neatnik.
What?
He's a neatnik.
I can't hear you.
He's a neatnik.
Oh.
So any questions on any of that? In the subcommittee, that was all pretty much where people are comfortable. Senator Bergman.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about the changes to Rule 8.2.
8.2, yes.
And I guess my first comment would be that I'm not so sure that changing this is really a good idea. You know, I don't chair a committee that has to do confirmations at the moment. And that's okay with me. But when I did, there were times when we just didn't have time to take up a confirmation because it came to us at a time of the session when we were under committee deadlines and we really needed to pay attention to getting that work done and we didn't have time to take, you know, especially if it's a controversial appointment to take, you know, one or two committee hearings to work on a confirmation. So I wasn't real thrilled with the idea of putting a limit of 1 year on it either. I thought we could certainly handle our business without being given deadlines, but you know, 1 year is in the rules now. I just am not sure of the wisdom in making it a shorter period of time.
Well, I think this in a lot of instances is not a shorter period of time because it's 60 legislative days. And what if you get into a circumstance where the name is sent up May 15th of the first year, and we don't come back till February 15th of the next year? You're up against 20 days. You're up against it. And if you're only going to be there a month, you wouldn't even actually used up 60 legislative days. So I think it shouldn't be viewed in that terms. I think it was discussed as being more realistic of how should we really think about this? The idea is that you don't want them just sitting around forever. So there should be some kind of deadline. That's what we did when we put the year in. And I think the discussion of 60 legislative days was to try to be more realistic about what is waiting around, not dealing with it, mean. And a legislative day is more relevant than just July and August. That's what the thinking is.
Mr. Chairman, is legislative day the day for a floor session?
Mr. Watson.
Pardon?
Mr. Watson. Legislative day is...
Mr. Chairman, legislative day is a day that either the House or the Senate has called into session.
Floor session or in committee?
Floor session.
Floor session.
And the normal pattern is to use about 60, maybe 65 legislative days in the first year and a little fewer than 60 legislative days in the second year. Right.
So I think, Senator Burgum, I think it actually... If you didn't like the one-year deadline, I think you like this better.
I understand. I guess my concern is that if you don't have time to do it during the first year of the session, oftentimes we did it at the beginning of the second year of the session, then the 60 days isn't going to be enough for you either.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burgum, 60 legislative days may be take you into the second year of this biennium.
It might or it might not. Depending.
Senator Burgum, don't you think it makes sense to get to these things and either confirm or don't confirm?
Usually it makes sense, but there are instances where it hasn't necessarily been in the best interest. I can think of some people who were not taken up in the first year and also not confirmed in the second year. So, you know, I just think these kind of things that, put these kind of restrictions on us and always. I mean, there's plenty of ways to put pressure on a committee chairman who is not held in a hearing on confirmation in an arbitrary manner without having any rules. And make sure they do have that hearing.
Well, keep in mind the rule says that it's withdrawn from the committee and placed on the calendar. It doesn't say the person is automatically confirmed.
Well, I understand that, but that's without benefit of having public hearings and having issues or questions that might be there raised. But really, if there are those issues or questions, then it does force a committee chairman to have a hearing on it in their committee when they might not really have time to do it properly.
So that's it.
Oh, I just think we ought to move faster on these things. I mean, we've done, Senator Bach was in there today, we've done, I think, 11 or 12 already in our committee, and they don't take forever. And I think you owe it to the committee, and I think you owe it to the commissioner to move. I don't see any purpose of these things dragging out for a year or 2 years. I don't take that long to do it. Get it over with. Move on. It's work in our committee. It's not back and they get their day in court. Why drag them out to the last week of session?
Senator Bergen?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metz.
My good friend, Senator Bergen.
Normally, they don't take very long, and normally, we hope we get commissioners that are, you know, not going to take very long, but occasionally we get some who take longer, and that's the situation that I worry about. I don't worry about ones that are just going through without needing a deadline.
Senator Burgum, I think as you read the rule, and I'm asking, it appears to me that if there's a legitimate reason why the committee didn't get to it, there's nothing that prevents the body from sending it back to the committee. I think that's the way the rule is. If a chair could make a legitimate argument about, hey, look, blah, 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 I think a motion, after it comes back, placed on the confirmation calendar, a motion to re-refer it back to the committee, I think, would be in order.
Okay.
But at least it puts some burden on the chair of the committee to either do it or have a good reason why you didn't.
Well, I think there should be a good reason. Sometimes there are.
Mr. Watson, do I read that rule correctly? Nothing would prevent the body from sending it back for a legitimate hearing if they wanted to.
Mr. Chairman, you are correct, and that has happened in the past.
Okay, no further questions on this. I have another rule, and I apologize to the subcommittee. This was something that I had talked about earlier, and I have shown it to Senator Senjum's office, the A18 that I'd like Senator Clark to offer or to put on the table. And the A18 deals with the general orders. Members recall, everybody here has actually been on done general orders. The current rule basically says you have to start every day, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what happens is you end up with a series of ones that everybody gets up every day and goes, progress, progress, progress. So all I'm suggesting is we offer an opportunity to create a list of ones that we're going to take up today that we perhaps could even give out prior to the session. So everybody knew what we were going to do that day. I think it would be a little more orderly. And we do that on special orders now where there's a list. And what I want to assure the minority, I in no intent am looking for the power here to stop a bill from being heard on general orders. I guarantee you that if someone says, will you keep skipping over my bill, we will get it on the list. I really would like to do is order the general order stuff in a way where members know what we're taking up, maybe organize it by topic sometimes, and we just can be orderly about the work. I commit to revisit this. If anybody thinks that I ever use this authority to abuse a member getting their bill heard on general orders, let's revisit this. That's not what I want to do. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, at first it sounded like it was special orders.
No.
But
the rule already exists for special orders.
If you communicate with members who have bills on general orders, and you are going to be taking up general orders, and they're not interested in taking it up that day, I think it would be appropriate to still use the numerical order of the ones who wish to take them up. I think that would be more in the spirit of general orders. But in other words, ask people to indicate in advance whether they're asking for progress or not, so that you don't go through, that you don't put the president through that tremendous burden of having to handle each one of those progress, and use that basis. It looks like you're trying to reorder also. So in other words, if they're in a different order, I think the general orders is, you know, they made it to the floor. Take them in that order unless they wish to progress them. But if you got advance word that they were not ready to take them up, then just go that way.
No, Senator Olson, I heard what you just said. Think about where we've been the last few years. We haven't even used general orders. And how did we get there? We got there, Senator Olson, I think we partly got there because a lot of members seemed to be frustrated that we were spending our time doing stuff that may not be the important work at that moment.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we got there because we had a divided legislature. And I think there was greater concern in not having bills that could be sent in either direction to become vehicles for something you didn't want. And so it gave you more control over what came up and how that was going to be used.
Okay, but Senator Olson, you already have that rule.
Huh?
You already have that rule. That rule under current rules says that if we only use special orders, that can be controlled by the majority leader. That's what the current rule says. Okay. With or without this change, if the majority wants to control what's up on the floor, we just never go to general orders.
I know.
So what I'm trying to express to you is, please trust a little here, that the intent here is not to create a situation where a member can't get their bill heard. The intent really is, let's try to do this in a way where we can organize the work on the floor so members feel that it was worth their time to come to the Senate floor. Senator Olson, I'm committing to you. If it doesn't work that way, let's revisit the rule.
Mr. Chair, help me understand what would be the problem with
the suggestion I made. There's something going on in your mind, and I'm not tracking with it.
Because there may be, because there may be a bill there that, yes, somebody really wants heard badly, but nobody in the Senate wants it heard badly because it's going to take 7 hours.
So, Mr. Chairman, and that made it through early from the committee. So, I mean, they've had to get through something to get to the general orders, Mr. Chair.
Right. And, Senator Olson, you've been around here long enough to know that that's not always the best filter.
Especially, Mr. Chair, when you have a committee chair who will hear all bills and require a vote on them.
But in that committee,
who would do that?
In that committee, we tried to filter them in the committee. Whereas I think realistically, we all know there are some committees that send a lot to the floor. And so, Senator Olson, I'm genuinely looking for a way to organize. I'm trying to bring back general orders, and I want to do it in a way where members kind of go, it was worth bringing back. Frankly, I have pushback from people who say, why are you doing that? Why are you even bringing back general orders, Larry? And I'm trying to bring it back in a way where members on both sides of the aisle will go, okay. Because if you recall, general orders can get bogged down pretty quickly. And sometimes it can take just one member to bog down general orders.
Chairman, maybe it's been so many years I've forgotten that.
How could you forget two members standing on the floor debating for 4 hours on a bill on general orders that everybody else is in having lunch and coffee?
Mr. Chairman, maybe that's what I've missed.
Senator Metzen.
Well, I just think the process would help me out a lot. That makes everybody happy, and I think the front desk would enjoy knowing
what we're
ahead of time what bill's coming up with it. So I don't, and I take you for your word. Senator Olson, I'm sure you do now. It's not working. I come back and we say, Larry, let's redo something. I think it works. So help us at the front desk a lot.
Mr. Kerry, refresh my memory with one bill that comes to your mind where that happened. A topic or something.
Labor Day starts.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's perennial. We're going to have that every year till time immemorial.
Yeah, and there may be a moment of the session where we don't want to spend an hour and a half or 2 hours on Labor Day start on the Senate floor.
Mr. Chairman, why don't we just get it over with?
Senator Olson, if we had the power to tell people to not stand up and chat, we could do that. But we don't have that power. I mean, the reason for general orders is so the body can't basically make everybody sit down and be quiet. Because we do want to, the reason to go to general orders is to allow a little more free flow of discussion with the members who are interested in that particular topic. And sometimes you get a bill where there's a lot of interest in discussing the topic. We're not going to change any votes.
But, Mr. Chairman, you're ultimately, if it's on general orders and it's not your intent to exclude that from that, it's going to have to happen sometime.
But maybe not that day.
So all you're saying is you're not trying to prevent any of the bills from coming up. You're just trying to manage what kinds of things might be dealt with on a given day,
yes,
given the time constraints or whatever that kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Bergman.
Mr. Chairman, I would support this rule. Myself, I'm one of those people that is very skeptical about general orders being the major way we handle bills on the floor of the Senate. And the reason is because I remember very well when, you've got four people in the chamber talking about something and everybody else has gone someplace. And, amendments are being decided. And then when people come back and they're going to vote on it on the regular final passage, they don't even know what's in the bill anymore because four people have been standing there changing it all day long. And that worries me a lot.
And typically there are four people that are on the committee that the bill came out of.
It might be or it might not be, but, there is no way to call people into the chamber on any amendment that might be offered, but they maybe wouldn't that an author might think people should be paying attention to. And so that's my concern, is that, you know, people aren't going to be as aware as they should be of what they're voting on in the final bills. So I support this. I'm not sure if it will help, but at least people would have some forewarning of the bills that would be coming up. And so if they're interested in a bill, then maybe they would, you know, make sure they don't have a lot of appointments on the front of the chamber steps.
I think it would be better for the stakeholders, too, to actually know what might come up.
If four people were on the floor debating a bill and voting on amendments, can anybody
call for a quorum?
I know you can't put them under call, but can you call for a quorum before a vote on amendments or anything on general orders? Because you can in a committee. But what's
how does
that
work? Mr. Bravo?
Ask for a quorum. Well,
you can do it, but what happens?
Everybody comes in off the out of the retirement.
Or if there is not a quorum, then you have to adjourn for the day, and then whoever else would thought they were going to have a bill up that day doesn't get their chance.
You're kind of a troublemaker today.
Secretary Flavin.
I just like to ask questions that I want to understand.
Secretary Flavin.
Mr. Chairman, the Senate rules for the quorum of a committee of the whole is the same as quorum of the House. In case a quorum is not present, the committee can take no other action than to rise.
Okay, to leave general orders.
No, you have to adjourn, or you have to leave general orders.
Well, that's what happens when the committee arises. Then that's the end of the committee for that day. And the motion to rise may be carried by less than a quorum. So I think you probably could informally, the chair of the committee could probably say a lack of a quorum is noted, and members will return, something like that, to try to quickly get a quorum.
And keep in mind, the way general orders can operate is it gives a little free flow of information without everybody being sitting there on a call of the Senate, on a roll call on every single vote. It loosens the system up a little and allows people to kind of do a little work who aren't on committees. That's the concept.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not against general orders. I'm not against general orders. I think that's when the whole body gets to function as a committee and to have some input in it.
Sarah Seeloff made a career on general orders, and Luther. Luther and Seeloff did all their work on general orders. For better or for worse.
Mr. Chairman, I remember those days.
And frankly, from the minority's perspective, general orders is a good thing because it can help you in a less threatening situation help clean some stuff up. Because if everything is a call of the Senate, roll call, there appears to have been a tendency for people to line up, regardless of what the issue is, on a partisan basis. And I think what Senator Senjum and I are trying to do is kind of lower the temperature. Not everything is about Democrat, Republican. Sometimes there generally are bad ideas sitting there that we should clean up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we've got a lot of new people that have never tasted of general orders, so there is an education that has to take place, and to not only understand what its purpose is and respect it so that we don't have this situation with four people sitting on the floor.
Right. And part of that will be if we can organize general orders in a way where people kind of go, oh, this is fun. Okay, so I'm
going to give it a try.
Thank you, Sarah Wilson. And again, if this isn't working, we'll revisit this. So, Senator Clark's motion then on A18 discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Anything else on the permit rules? There were two amendments offered. No. Just for disclosure, Senator Marty had an amendment to allow 35 authors. 15 authors, and that was rejected by the subcommittee. I think it failed. No one offered it. My guess is Senator Marty will probably pursue that on the floor. And then Senator Marty had an amendment that said that anybody who serves on a conference committee or the staff of the conference committee can't either make offers or accept offers in a non-public setting. And it just seemed a little tight. So the committee...
Stupid.
Committee voted that down.
No. We actually got that was backwards. The first one Senator Neville did offer, but it was voted down. The second one, nobody offered.
Oh, I've read that backwards. The, Senator Neville offered the 15 authors on every bill, and that was voted down. And the other one failed for a motion. So I think the where Senator Murdy, I mean, he can speak for himself, obviously, but I think he just wants people to try to do your conference committee in as open as a process as you can and try to avoid kind of private consummation of conference committees. It's the best, that's where he's headed a little bit. And I think the Rules Committee just said, gee, you really don't want to prevent, the subcommittee said, you really don't want to prevent members from having informal conversations that might unlock a conference committee.
Mr. Chair, in my particular committee, I mean, making most suggestions right out in the public, and you're going to have, you know, 50 people from the audience on your... a lot of that has to be done behind this.
What was it on this one? Chairman, I think I would inform that this amendment was trying to go on a joint rules of that.
Okay,
you can bring it up, but, you know, but I mean...
I think, wasn't that all the amendments that were going to serve, Senator Barton?
Well, just so people understand, occasionally we have had, on the conference committees I have either chaired or served on, we have had issues in the conference committee that were kind of informally had, you know, three or four legislators who maybe weren't even on the conference committee working out that issue. Because they worked on it, but they weren't on the conference committee. And so a rule like that would sort of prevent even those discussions. I mean, the conference committee made the final decision, but they gave us their recommendation, and that would, you know, make that difficult.
One other thing I wanted to bring up, and there was a concern in the body that the ethics committee can get a complaint. And then apparently it's happened once or twice in the past where the member felt that the Ethics Committee, which is this bipartisan group, disposed of the complaint without the member who made the complaint ever having a chance to talk to the Ethics Committee. And I've discussed Senator Metzen's going to chair the Ethics Committee again, and he and I had a brief conversation to the effect that let's just try to rectify that. If someone makes a complaint, that the Ethics Committee should at least allow that member to come before the four-member Ethics Committee and chat about why they made the complaint. There's a set of rules there that keeps things private and so forth, and that will all be maintained. But I think just giving an individual member, if they took enough time to write up a complaint, at least give them the opportunity to talk to the members on the Ethics Committee about why they took the time to do it. And I think we're just going to handle that informally at this point to see if that takes care of any concern there. And I think I've gotten feedback that let's see if that works. So no amendment was offered on that right now, and I think let's just see if it works, and my guess is it will. So.
Mr. Chairman, I know Senator Periso had raised an issue on the floor, and I think somehow, I don't think she realized she needed to have dealt with it before that I was even unaware that you had a meeting of a subcommittee to deal with rules, so I don't think she got her issue.
Oh, this is travel?
That had to do with recognizing another legislative organization that doesn't happen to be the one. NCSL is one that the state we join as a legislature. The ALEC, the American Legislature, is one you join as individuals. They really are almost equal in size from the standpoint of the conferences and structure. They have committees that meet. I happen to serve on education on both of them. I rarely get to a meeting, education committee meeting of either of them, but. It was just, and it's, I don't know that it's an overworked situation, but just feeling that sometimes you look at the convention, either the timing or whatever, and it would be nice to have that choice. And I don't know if there's a strong feeling in what would it be as to whether that could be accepted for consideration or not. That's the issue that she was raising.
First, that topic is not dealt with in the rules.
That was a special...
Apparently it's a policy. It's a resolution.
It's a resolution. That was not in rules.
Right.
Okay, so that option is still open for discussion.
Yes, but on that I can give you some information. Senator Senjum mentioned to me today or yesterday that apparently Senator Parasol and Dibble are chatting. So, okay.
I don't know if they have, but I think Senator Dibble wanted to, and I don't know if they've done that yet. So, but yes. If this is a separate issue,
separate issue, I withdraw that
and let that work then.
Yeah, and I know this issue has some history, and I'm an agnostic. I don't know enough about the history to know whether I care one way or the other.
Catholic.
What?
You're agnostic?
On this issue. So, Senator Olson,
I have not forgotten it.
ALEC
is recognized, while it is a bipartisan group, it is recognized as being more conservative. In some cases, NCSL leans the other way rather than necessarily neutral. But what's wrong with, you know, understanding issues from more than one perspective?
At some point, we will deal with whatever we have to deal with there.
Yeah.
I didn't feel the urgency because I was hoping we wouldn't be encouraging people to travel during session.
Yes.
Members should be aware. A few members have been given permission to travel, but they were particular things related to work that might relate to what they're doing right now. I don't want to go through who they were, but it's just a few. But I've been told that in the past, there's been an attempt to discourage travel during the session, which seems to make sense. And just so you know, I'm open to expanding some more travel for members to get education, you know, to learn some things. And so let's just see where we're at on our budget stuff. But so I would prefer, I get the impression that members feel that we've shut it down so much in the last few years that it might be penny wise and pound foolish, because I don't think we're probably as active in some national things as we might want to be. Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman, I know that NCSL does offer some scholarships, and I imagine, you know, other organizations that have meetings might do the same thing. And so, you know,
Mr. Chairman, I think ALEC does it to some extent too, and I think part of the pullback from legislatures on out-of-state travel has driven they're trying to get people to come with more incentives like that. So I don't disagree with your holding back on it. I apologize for mixing it up that it was a part of rules.
Okay, so we have Senator Clark then moves that the permanent rules RESENRULE 07-1 as amended be recommended to pass. Discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion adopted. Members, the intent would be to take this up on the floor tomorrow, if we could. And I will talk with Senator Senjum and find out if that works or whether people need 5 days to find amendments. I'd hope we wouldn't spend a lot of time on this on the floor, but obviously we'll do what we have to do. So, anything else that members want to chat about that we don't have deadlines yet with the House? And let me just, Senator Clark and I have been very adamant that we'd like our budget and finance bills out before the spring break. And I think legitimately the House is concerned, because of all their new members and stuff, that they maybe can't get there. And we're trying to figure out a way to accommodate that. I just fear that, and please talk to me informally if you have thoughts on this. I just fear that if we don't kind of do that before the Easter break, Easter Passover break, we kind of set us up for a month of chaos, which we'll regret. And I would rather just get to the point where we make these decisions, get into conference committees, give us plenty of time in conferences to resolve things, and move on. So if members, Senator Metz and I have chatted about this, but I want to say the House legitimately, and I totally understand, they have a lot of new members, and they're concerned about that. So, and we also are asking that the policy deadline be basically after the budget deadline. Why? Because the work of this session is the budget, and we're going to be here next year to do more policy if we want. And it just seems like having everybody spending all their time rushing to committees a week or two before the Easter break just to get all the policy bills done seems to me like a misallocation of resource time, when the budget is really what we should focus on this year. So we're having fine discussions with the House. There's, you know, we're not fighting or anything. It's just, I think, they've got a bigger body, and they have a lot of new members, and I think they're just concerned about how they're going to get their work done. And I think they're having a hard time understanding why we would want to swap budget deadlines and the policy deadlines. But to me, it just makes so much sense to do that. But if you have any thoughts on this, let us know. But Senator Cohen has put out a schedule for people to be done prior to that, off the floor, all the budget bills off the floor before April 2nd. And Senator Bach knows that his deadline is to get his bill off the floor before April 2nd. I think we can do it. It's 2 full months. So, and I think it's a month after we get the forecast. Senator Berglund keeps going. She can do it. We know she can do it.
Mr. Chairman, I just, for the public record, would like to say that our biggest problem in putting our bill together is getting fiscal notes. I don't expect that we're going to, you know, improve our ability to get fiscal notes when we have early deadlines. So I just, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm not trying to do what everybody wants to do around here, but I can just tell you in the past, you know, I remember sometimes we didn't even have a fiscal note on a portion of our bill when we got it to the full finance committee. You know, they're running in and bringing me paper, and I'm sitting there trying to figure out what to do, and, you know, you just can't have, well, sometimes you can have a little blank in your bill and kind of guesstimate it, but you can't have very many of those in a bill like mine because they all affect each other.
Well, Senator Berger, I think one of the things...
Maybe if you want to have Senator Cohen send a memo over to the Department of Human Services warning them about when our fiscal
we can do that.
Are going to be needed, that might, I don't know, I don't hold out a lot of hope, but that would, that's my problem.
Okay, we'll try to assist you there. We have been very, Senator Clark and I have been very clear with the governor's office that we're headed.
Right, I understand that, but that's not the same as getting it to the people who do the fiscal notes.
Next meeting, I think there has been a supplement to the audit, and I think you've all gotten both the audit and the supplement, and you recall the way we're going to handle that is we're not going to have a subcommittee, but we've delegated that to Senator Fredrickson to review it, talk with the auditors, and then he will make a presentation to us when the auditor shows up here. And it takes about a week. We need to give about a week's notice to the firm that did the audit. I don't know where they're from. So once Senator Fredrickson's ready, we will call the audit firm and we'll show up here and have the audit before us. So you should, I know you'll all want to read that audit and study it. And good. So,
all right. Mr. Chairman, I apologize for you having to put up with me as the only voice for the minority.
It was fun. Meeting adjourned.